Hello, and welcome to the So What podcast, in which political economic analyst JP Lantman discusses the issues uppermost in the minds of South Africans. You can find a written version of this content on JP's website, jplantman.co.za. I am Ruda Lantman, and I am your host. Hello, and a very warm welcome to a newsletter dated the 12th of May, 2025, with the title Budget 3.0, A Moment of Decision. 2 weeks ago, on Freedom Day, the Cape High Court prohibited the Minister of Finance, from proceeding with the VAT hike. Heavens, it feels like ages and ages ago.
Yeah.
But even before that, the minister himself withdrew his proposal for that VAT hike. Why did he do that?
Because he lost political support. If you go back to our previous note on the budget, there are four decisions to be taken in the budget. The first decision is the approval of the fiscal framework. That was approved on the 2nd of April, almost 6 weeks ago. But there already one could see it was, as we called it in that note, a very close run thing. The fiscal framework was approved by a majority of 12 members of parliament, but there were 24 members of parliament not present in the assembly when the vote was taken. So it was a marginal thing anyway. And we raised in that note the prospect that the other three decisions that awaits the budget may not be approved. And what has happened is simply that some parties, particularly Action South Africa, Action SA, has walked back from their support for the fiscal framework. And I think the minister realized he didn't have the votes and he runs a very real risk of losing the vote in the subsequent three approvals that awaits the budget. And then the court decision came on top of that. So it was back to zero base.
But all these complications basically also arose because the legal situation in South Africa has changed, huh?
Very much so. South Africa, before and after 1994, followed the Westminster model of budget approval. And the Westminster model was simply that Parliament can vote a budget up or they can vote it down, but they cannot change it. The detail is frozen. You can say yes or you can say no, but you can't change it. We've had that system in our budget approval for many, many years. The 1996 constitution had a clause, section 77, which made it clear that legislation must be passed by parliament to give that authority to parliament, not just to approve or reject, but also to change. For many, many years before and after we became a democracy, our law around budget approvals were fairly straightforward. Parliament could approve a budget, they could vote it up, or they could reject a budget, vote it down, but they could not change the budget. The detail of the budget was frozen. That was the arrangement before and after 1994. Then the final constitution in 1996 contained a clause in section 77 that Parliament must make legislation, must approve legislation to give itself the power to change budgets, not just to approve or reject them. That was done in 2009, some 13 years after the final constitution was approved. Now, for the first couple of years after that change or amendment, it didn't really matter because the ANC was still the majority party. And the Minister of Finance was always ANC. So if he proposes a budget, then the party votes it through and off it went. After last year's election, of course, those numbers have changed. The ANC is no longer in control. On its own, it needs to form coalitions with other people, and now you need the support of opposition parties to get the budget through Parliament. So it's interesting, Ruta, just to look back a little bit at 1993, the year just before we became a democracy. Derek Keyes was Minister of Finance, and he, in one budget, in one move, he took the VAT rate from 10%, which is what it was, to 14%. It's an absolutely incredible move. It was really a political achievement. And so how did he do it? Well, he did it by consulting with everybody inside and outside Parliament, parliamentary parties, outside people outside like the ANC at that stage, COSATU, Communist Party, and so on, about what the budget numbers are. He shared it with them and he said, look, this is the picture. What do you think we should do? And in the end, nobody opposed. People may not have supported But nobody opposed the move of VAT from 10% to 14%.
At that point, there also wasn't a majority party who could just push it through.
In a sense, yes. I mean, you had a majority party in Parliament, but Parliament was de facto already no longer the only people governing the country. And Keyes had the insight to see that and to bring the extra parliamentary people along. Now, what happened now in 2025 is that Minister Ngonongwana, the Minister of Finance, he missed this very simple process trick. Just involve people, give them all the facts, let them understand what the situation is, and then let them decide what they want to do. He missed that simple process trick and he paid a political price for it.
Where do we stand now?
Well, where we stand now is that the minister must table a new budget, which he will do on 21 May, more or less 10 days from now. And the numbers are quite frightening. First of all, with no VAT increase in the budget, the deficit on the income side will be, over a three-year period, 75 billion rand. It'll be 13.5 billion rand for this year. But remember, next year, VAT was supposed to go up another 0.5%. And then over a three-year period, which is the period of our budgets, that would have gone up to 75 billion. So that's number one. You're now 75 billion down on the income side. Then secondly, when the budget was prepared and submitted in February, it assumed a growth rate for the economy of 1.9%. Since then, we've had the Trump tariffs and all the shenanigans around that. And global growth has been forecast to be lower. Also, South Africa's growth, more or less by 0.5%. The budget is made at 1.9. We can now work with a budget of, say, 1.4, 0.5% lower. If you have 0.5% less economic growth, obviously you will have less tax income. And then the third thing that has happened is that Trump has cut all the direct transfers or grants that he has given to South Africa for AIDS treatment, for health research, and so on. All that has been cut, and that amount adds up to just under 10 billion, about 9.5 billion. So if you take those three numbers, you lose VAT, you lose economic growth, and you've lost the cash grant that came into the country every year, you're looking at billions and billions of a shortfall. It's really a huge amount of money that must now be covered.
You say we are faced with a fundamental question. What do you mean?
The fundamental question is now, given this huge shortfall in both income and extra expenditure, what will our parliamentarians, who now have the ability to change the numbers in the budget, what will they do? Will they be willing to cut back expenditure, or will they simply ignore the fact that there's a huge deficit and simply borrow more money? That is really the essence. We know there will be an income shortfall. We know that expenditure is much more than income. So where do you go now? Now, the important point here is, in the last 3 years, under Minister Ngonongwana, there's been a concerted effort to stabilize debt. How do you stabilize debt? You run a primary surplus. A primary surplus is simply your income is more than your expenditure before you pay interest. Once you've paid interest, of course, you're still down. There's a deficit. You must borrow money. But at least it is the beginning of a process of working down your debt. Now, for this year, in the first budget, he had a number of 71 billion rand as a primary surplus. And that's a big number. That's a big number. If you can run with 70, 80 billion a year for a couple of years primary surplus, you will stabilize your debt and you will start working that down. So the critical issue now, the critical decision that Parliament must take is, will they stick with a primary surplus of roughly 71 billion, can be a bit lower, it's not a strange smash, or will they simply ignore that, run with the expenditure which is there, and run up more debt? That is the question that's now facing Parliament.
Why shouldn't we just borrow more? All those expenditure items are incredibly important.
No, absolutely. Whether it's education or health or AIDS or capital expenditure on infrastructure, indeed. And that is the point about the budget. There are a huge number of very important items that nobody wants to cut. But you don't have enough money. You know, we don't have a money tree. We're still looking to plant that. So you've got to cut your cloak according to your cloth. And so the cost of borrowing is what is important. Now, let's just look at the numbers that the minister had in his first budget, which are the numbers that we now have before his new budget. He was penciling in to borrow 394.6 billion rand. It's an enormous amount of money.
That was after the VAT increase.
That was after the VAT increase. Now he's lost the VAT increase, so that number will obviously go up. The difference that it makes, Runa, is for every 0.01%, or as it is called in the jargon, one basis point. A percentage consists of 100 basis points. Every one basis point increase
in the interest rate.
In the interest rate, increases the actual interest payment by an enormous amount. This 394 billion that the minister wants to borrow, it means he will pay with 0.01% extra, he will pay an extra 39 million rand a year in interest, or to put it more graphically, more than 100,000 rand per day for every day of the week. So you're talking big money here. You can employ a lot of teachers and doctors for 100,000 rand a day. Absolutely. So that's why it matters. You cannot just borrow more, because the more you borrow, the more interest you have to pay and you lose control of your situation. What we've seen when the budget was not approved and we had the whole budget kerfuffle in February is that that has already led to an increase in the interest payable. And that increase will cost us more. That is just the reality.
Why is the bond market part of what you're writing about? Where does that fit in?
The bond market is the place where politics and economics meet. That's the place where those two forces come together and they result in a particular thing, and that particular thing is the interest rate. So the bond market or the capital market is simply a market where people with money come, pension fund, insurance companies and so on, banks. They come there and they offer money to the government, which government wants to borrow. Capital market is where governments go worldwide to finance their deficits. It's a standard institution worldwide. So you've got people with money and you've got a government who wants to borrow money. They come together. There's an auction where people bid. This happens in South Africa every Tuesday. And an interest rate is set at which the government then can borrow money from the investors. Now, that rate is called the long rate. Why the long rate? Because normally the duration is for 10 years. It can also be a little bit shorter, 5 years, 7 years. It can also be 20 years or 30 years, but the average standard that we use worldwide is the 10-year yield, which is the product of that auction that takes place at the bond market. So the bond market is a really very substantial institution and an important institution. Without that, the government will struggle to finance itself and to finance particularly its deficit. But it's also the place, as I say, where politics and economics meet. Political decisions impact on the bond market. When, for example, we had the kerfuffle around the budget, the long rate went up because people were saying there's more risk now. And because there's more risk and we don't know whether it will be repaid, therefore we have to charge more for our money. So politics affect the bond market. There's no question about that. And if you want to keep the long rate down, you want to keep your interest rates as low as possible, you need sensible politics, but you also need sensible fiscal policies.
We actually saw this play out when the GNU was formed.
Absolutely. Since the formation of the GNU about 11 months ago, the long rate has dropped by as much as 80 basis points. It reduces the amount of interest that we have to pay substantially. Since we've had the budget kerfuffle, that thing reversed again and so on. Trump's tariffs influenced that. Many things play a role. The big thing is to try and keep that number as low as possible. And it's not just really because it's about what the government pays in interest. It also sets the cost of capital in the economy. Everybody looks at the 10-year yield. Companies who want to expand, who want to invest, who want to buy machinery, they look at the long yield and they calculate their cost of capital from that. So if that number goes up, your cost of capital rises, investment becomes more difficult. That number goes down, cost of capital goes down, investment becomes easier. So it's a really important number to manage in the national economy. In fact, I want to go so far as to say that that number, the long rate, is more important than what the VAT rate is. It's more important than the VAT rate.
We saw the impact in America recently. Even President Trump is not, immune.
Absolutely. We saw two big U-turns by Trump. The first one was when he announced his tariffs on Liberation Day, the 2nd of April. There was a violent reaction from the financial markets, including the bond market. 3-4 days later, he capitulated. And he said, okay, he's suspending them for 90 days. Now we will have to see whether those tariffs come back after 90 days. There's increasingly a view that they won't. But that's not the point. The point is he made a U-turn. His other U-turn was when he threatened to fire Jerome Powell, the chairman of the American Central Bank, Federal Reserve. Once again, a huge reaction from the bond market. Trump retreated. So much so that the Financial Times talk about TARCO. Trump again chickens out. Now he chickens out before the power of the bond market. We've also seen it in the UK, where Liz Truss in 2022 became the shortest serving prime minister in British history, 50 days. Why? She submitted a budget to Parliament which was not funded at all. There was no possibility of funding it. And the bond market just said no, and she was out. We also saw it earlier here in South Africa when Des van Rooyen was our Minister of Finance for 4 days. Why was he out after 4 days? Because of a violent reaction from the bond market. So the bond market is where politics and economics meet. It determines the long rate, and you cannot escape from that discipline.
In summary, so what?
I think the so what is, first of all, for the first time in South Africa's history, not just our democratic history, but also before 1994, Parliament now has the right to change a budget, not just approve it or reject it, not just vote it up or vote it down, but actually change the numbers inside the budget. They now have that ability. With that power, of course, comes a huge responsibility. Parliament now has the responsibility to exercise their "we can change it" discretion, or "we can change it" power, in a way which doesn't undermine the broader economy, in a way which is reconcilable with what the constraints of the bond market. Our biggest challenge at the moment is a challenge that Kodungwana has been working on for 3 years now, and that is to stabilize our debt. That you can only do if you run a primary surplus. And the decision now before Parliament is not to take that surplus which is there and just throw it to the wind and run a bigger deficit, because then we won't make it in the long run. So politics and economics meet in the bond market. Yes, the will of the people are important. We've seen the will of the people expressed around the VAT debate. It's also now important to go to look at long-term fiscal stability. And we've got to balance the will of the people with long-term fiscal stability. That is the challenge which is now before Parliament, before 21 May.
Thank you very much. We will be watching that with great interest.
Get the popcorn ready for 21 May.
Thank you for listening to the So What podcast. If you enjoy this content, please don't forget to leave a review and a rating, and please consider subscribing so you don't miss any future episodes. Also, tell your friends. Remember, you can find a written version of all JP's content at jplandman.co.za.